Blog Talk Radio.
Went to the fall of Nazi Germany was that the case for reparations was made for the Jews on two bases, one being the economic base, that is, the fascist government had expropriated land holdings of individual Jews, property holdings of individual Jews, but that it was a collective act aimed at Jewish people as a whole. The moral part of the argument, although it was never stated in the legal case, the real moral force behind the argument for Jewish reparations was the fact that the Germans had indeed, you know, practiced such barbarity against the Jews, with 6 million in the ovens. You know, it was a case that nobody could ignore. The parallels for black people are, of course, the stolen labor, the free labor, in fact, the stolen people, you know, literally physically stolen from one place and transported to another. And, of course, the series of barbarities, you know, practiced against our people have meant for us that we have always lived in a fascist nation. And we have not experienced just a 5 or 6 year period of fascism, but we have experienced a history in this country. It's been a history of 40 million people killed, 40 million black people killed before getting to America on the slave ships between 1810 and 1850. The countless lynchings, the countless acts of wanton police brutality, what happened in North Philadelphia not long ago, when a mentally retarded child was shot down by a policeman, a 15-year-old kid. That for us, this has been the course of events, and that, you know, there are precedents and parallels to the argument. That's one whole thing. Without getting too tedious and recognizing that most of us here have some experience in the church and can probably speak to this better than I, there is, for Christians especially, for people coming out of the Judeo-Christian experience, there is a theological basis which has to do with what we call the three R's of repentance, reparations or restitution, and reconciliation. That what has happened has been that crimes have been committed. Sins have been committed. There is a blood debt, you know, and that as it says, making scriptural reference, you know, as it says in the Bible, if you sinned against somebody, if you have a debt, that it's not enough just to mild repentance, but that the tree is known by its fruits, and that in order to make the repentance real, that there has to be some concrete act of repayment, of setting things straight, and that this is, you know, an action that must be, you know, a prelude to a full and complete reconciliation, man to man and brother to brother and brothers together to God. So for people coming from a theological basis, there's more than enough in the scripture to explain and justify and prescribe the justice of the whole business of reparations.
But, you know, I think I have found that too often people would like to jump to the resurrection and the victory without going through the struggle. By that I mean in a meeting of our council of the diocese a few months ago, one of my fellow priests seemed disturbed by some of my expressions and my feelings and tried to assure me that he was my brother. And then he asked me, aren't we brothers? I'm sure it was a painful thing for him to hear me say, no, we are not. And I feel that if he really wants to enter into a relationship with brotherhood, he must first recognize the injustice and the damage which has been done to me, and that there must be an acknowledgement of this, and there must be done, something must be done to repair that damage which has been done before we can arrive at a relationship which is really called brotherhood.
Yeah, I think this is tremendously important, because I think the history of the church in America has been one where there is, in a sense, been cheap grace. You know, we've always been concerned about confessing our sins, but we've never really pushed this whole business of doing something physical to repay or make restitution for what we've done wrong. You know, there are very few church services today, for example, that don't include a period where you confess your weaknesses and your faults and the injustices that you have committed. But yet very few services really emphasize this need to make outward signs of your concern and your repentance. You know, we had in an earlier discussion had talked about the fact that in the gathering together for the Lord's Supper, you know, we're always inviting people to the table, those who truly repent and are sorry for their sins and all of that. But even at that rate, you know, to come to the table isn't enough, because we haven't encouraged the going out first to make straight what we've done wrong and then return to the table with having repaired some of this physical damage so that we haven't really made the physical signs of the inward change. And we have never really encouraged this.
I'm just wondering, Cal, Reverend, you know, that seems to be so very obvious, so very clear, but it's very difficult for me to believe that there are really churchmen, black or white, for that matter, who would even make an attempt to refute that. And hence, it's very difficult for me to believe that there are churchmen who sincerely refute the demand for reparations on any grounds other than the grounds of their own bias and their own prejudice. Perhaps politically they may say that there's no ground for the demand for reparations, but theologically, out of the framework of their own faith, it's just very difficult for me to understand why the Episcopalians had as much difficulty in South Bend as they had. Why the Presbyterian Church or the Methodist Church, for that matter, would go through any great pains about it, about the acceptance of the guilt.
One, I think that a part of the problem is, again, this matter of making certain assumptions which have not been true. This has been called a democracy. It has been called a land of opportunity. It has been said that anybody who has got any gumption about him can make it to this great American form of life. And therefore, the assumption is that if I have not made it, it's because I am lazy, I am inferior, or there's something wrong with me. But it's right there for you. And these persons would refuse to acknowledge that there has been oppression, that there has been a denial of opportunities, that there has been a suppression of the rights of not only the black group as one of the American minorities, but all minority groups. And I think that this is where the hang-up is, the refusal to accept the fact that this has been an oppressive kind of a situation. And if people can once say that we have oppressed, we have denied, but even beyond that, we have destroyed. Because, you know, as I think today of the whole thing about violence on the streets, people do not connect this violence with the other forms of violence and the violations of the dignity of man, the violation of our human rights, the violation of all of the other rights. And therefore, the violence on the streets is but an outward invisible expression of the other subtle forms of violence, and they're really not so subtle. But the other forms of violence, which are not being talked about. And once people are willing to acknowledge this, then perhaps they can say, well, it seems as though this is a real case for reparations. We have indeed damaged, and repair must be made.
You mean to suggest then, you know, I believe that when Jim Foreman went to spoke at a Sunday morning at St. George's Episcopal Church in New York City, I think, when the question and answer period out to the end, or after the morning service, the rector of that church made the observation that if his people were told that their church was operating on funds that came from prostitution and gambling and a lot of illicit kinds of relationships having to do with sex and obvious, or that had out of the puritanical tradition or the obvious sin, that they would be repulsed, that they would be sick unto death even. But that if they were told, as they were that morning, that their funds, the operating money was coming from the banks that invest in the apartheid system of South Africa, and that their funds are derived from the cheapest banana republics of Latin America and from the backs of black folk in this country who are exploited, and nobody even so much as raises an eyebrow.
But this is the violence.
That's the kind of violence
right.
That you're referring to. And I'm just wondering, if you gentlemen find that to be the case,
you know, and the reason for it. Because it's just difficult for me, in spite of what Paul has said, you know, that the people who have refused to recognize their participation and complicity in the racist structure. But, you know, for what reasons do they refuse to recognize it? I mean, they certainly can't be sound reasons in terms of their own theology and their own faith. I can, you know, I could very well accept that if you got A. James in our churches, that's, you know, commonly referred to the person who sits back in the pew. Well, certainly in white churches, there's somebody comparable to that. You know, that old sister who's been there for years sitting on that one pew, and perhaps she doesn't understand because she's waiting for the prophet to give her direction. But why is it that the prophet can't accept it? Why is it the prophet is unable to see or refuses to see?
The thing that I think either puts people off or is a convenient excuse is the mode, let's say, in which the manifesto and Foreman and Muhammad and others make the confrontation. That is, to me, in terms of my own faith, in terms of my confidence in the Bible, the biblical picture of people like Amos coming into Bethel, into the church, into the cathedral of that little town, and pronouncing God's judgment on them for the hypocrisy of all their religious assemblies with injustice at their door, and how Amaziah, the head priest, didn't like it a bit and told Amos to get out of there. How Jesus finally, after a lot of conversation with the Pharisees and others of the religious establishment of that time, finally felt that it just wasn't getting through, and he went into the cathedral nation. I can't help but think, you know, of a guy like Foreman coming into Riverside, or any of you going into any church, just exactly, as far as I can see, what Jesus did. And, of course, you get crucified for it, that is, people don't like to have judgment pronounced on them. And to me, one of the soundest, in terms of my own theological faith, one of the soundest aspects of the whole manifesto, regardless of its rhetoric, is the fact that, to me, there's a very modern parallel of a prophetic judgment. Now, the mode of it today, as with Amos and with Jesus, offends and irritates and makes the people, of course, who are being judged furious because of the exposure, because they can't hide anymore. They're out there. And here is this thing that begins to unfold all the exploitation and the injustice. So I think people react in fury at the mode of the confrontation and really then don't deal in their own minds with the justice.
Is it a conscious decision to react to the mode, or is that simply an excuse not to deal with the issue itself? Is it that the mode sort of sidetracks one's thinking momentarily so that they are unconsciously they react to the blatant interruption of services? Or do they react to it consciously, knowing that the reason why they're reacting to that is because they don't want to deal with the issue?
I believe that the people in that circumstance,
All right, family. Greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and what you just heard, I'm wondering, can anyone guess what year or roughly when you think that conversation took place? And just to give you a little backdrop on that, this is a group of ministers, theologians, and so forth. Five of them are black, but there's also activists. And I think two or three are Caucasian. And so this conversation is about, obviously, black reparations. That's what it's titled. And it featured someone that we are paying tribute to tonight, and that is, of course, Father Paul Washington. You heard him in several presentations when he talked, one, about one of his colleagues who happened to be of European descent asked him something about being a brother. And Father Paul, I dropped out just so so amusing when I found this. And Father Paul said, no, I don't believe I can call you my brother until you begin to recognize the errors of your ways. I mean, that's, I'm summarizing or paraphrasing, but that's pretty much what he was saying. And again, I knew Father Paul Washington, loved him dearly, and he me. Today is his ancestral transition day, which is why, of course, I wanted to pay tribute to him and others, because as you can tell, this issue of reparations is not anything new, obviously. It's been around quite a while. So I'm just curious, and I'll come back to you all later to see if you can kind of guess when this conversation took place. And let me tell you, family, it really gets heated, and that puts it mildly. There's two ministers or pastors, I'm not sure which name they go by, which title they go by right at the moment, but they get really upset after a while, particularly with one of their European associates, colleagues, or what have you, who begins to say a couple of things that they really didn't like, and they really let him know that they didn't like it. Anyway, again, that feature, Father Paul Washington, and again, if you are not familiar with him, you really should be. He was incredible. Years ago when there was an embargo on, let me see, was it Iraq or Iran? Ooh, I got to go back and check on that, because we're talking about the 1980s or 70s or something like that. Anyway, there was an embargo on one of those countries, and Father Paul Washington was like, yeah, okay, right, and he went. Anyway, I mean, that's just the kind of you talk about serious black man, that he exemplified it without a shadow of a doubt. And so we just feel so blessed to have been able to, you know, been in his presence. He loved the Million Woman March, and we did many, many things at his church. His church is renowned. It is called the Church of the Advocate. It is where the doors opened there for the Black Panther Party, for its actual conference, first conference, I think it was. And it also had the National Black Power Conference there, I believe 1968 there it was. Again, Father Paul was like none other. And again, we wanted to bring him forward today and remembering him and the type of black men, but also the type of black ministers that myself and others had the opportunity to kind of come up in and with and around. And there are others, of course, in other cities, but I'm here in Philly, so, of course, I have a responsibility to make sure that the history and legacy of black folks in this city is not only taught, is documented, and, of course, is disseminated in terms of education, awareness, and so forth. So, again, that particular clip featured Father Paul Washington. And, again, if you get the opportunity, by all means, check him out. Of course, he has books that he wrote, and there is a library here in Philadelphia that has his actual papers. I'm really glad that they were able to do that, even though it's under the auspices of Temple University, but that's a whole other story. But at any rate, we're just so wonderfully happy to be able to share with you that kind of information. We came across that clip or that information really by accident. It's almost like in a faraway chest somewhere, but we were able to find it, and we've been playing it periodically, particularly at Father Paul Washington's Earth Day or his transition day, which, of course, again, was today. He made transition, I believe, in 2001, I think, or thereabouts. But anyway, we're going to be going back to more information about him very shortly. And also, we want to pay tribute tonight as well to the great president, Dr. Imari Obadeli. And we're going to play a few clips from him as well, because, you know, people talk about reparations today, and it's a wonderful thing that they do. However, interestingly enough, when you ask them about certain people, some that is, they don't know what the heck you're talking about. Well, we make certain that we provide as much information about those who have come before us, and that being President Amari Obadeli certainly is one of them. You know, Queen Mother Moore, the Republic of New Africa, Dr. Amari Obadeli was definitely, you know, key in the development of the Republic of New Africa and of NCOBRA. And while some, you know, have issues with NCOBRA, and it's not so much as the issues with NCOBRA as it is some of the people, that's, you know, it's a whole other story, and I guess that does have an effect on other modes of operation. But, again, I would dare say if it wasn't for NCOBRA, we wouldn't even be talking about reparations today, for real, for real. So, you know, it's a wonderful thing to be able to connect the black dots, and we do that here at New Day. Before we get ready to bring in our first family member guest for tonight, and by the way, we're going to be talking with three people. One of them is going to be calling in from Atlanta. Brother Reuben, who, of course, is originally from Chicago, is going to be joining us from Atlanta tonight. There's a major conference in Atlanta, which is, again, why we put the reparations piece was on time, very appropriate. There's a major conference in Atlanta this weekend. A lot of folks are down there. And so Brother Reeve is going to give us a report on what's going on in Atlanta with that conference. And again, it is definitely going on down there, needless to say. Sister Sheila, who is also in Atlanta, but for a different conference. It was a Black Sustainability Conference. She will be joining us next week to give us a report on the conference that she presented at that conference. But she will be telling us more about that when she comes on next week. So that should be really, really good to hear about, you know, what they talked about, what they focused on, and so forth. So we're looking forward to having her on next week. Also next week, Brother Kofi from the National Black United Front will be joining us to tell us about the annual Ancestral Caravan. Yeah, now you know, that's just, we talk about our ancestors, but oftentimes I ask folks questions like, so what do you do that embraces them, represents them, you know, continues their work? And a lot of times, you know, it's like that, nothing, crickets, as they say. And so with Brother Kofi and the National Black United Front and other groups, MWM is building or further building with them so that as we proceed with the Million Woman World March and other activities, we will be able to really activate some of the things we've been working on for the past decade. Minimally, and also some of the things that we are projecting for the future with our Black Print Agenda 2535. Anyway, also tonight, we are going to talk to Brother Principal Abdul Muhammad. Very interesting situation that our brother is going to share with us. In regards to we're very clear about institutional racism, systemic racism, and that puts it mildly. But the thing that we don't really talk about the way that we should, of course, is what we're going to do about it. And so we are definitely going to be talking more about that as we proceed when we talk with Brother Abdul, who is going to tell us about some very interesting things that have been going on in Chicago, specifically in the education so-called arena. And we tend to call it Eurocation, which one of our brothers here, Brother Sabur Muhammad, used to always call it. And he was doing research and writing a book before his transition, his untimely transition. And interestingly enough, again, he called it Eurocation, which is, you know, so appropriate, so very, very appropriate. At any rate, Brother Abdul Muhammad is going to talk about what is going on with him. Of course, they fired him for the great work that he has been doing. He was fired, and they created these trumped-up charges on him to do that. And so he's going to tell us about that. A lot of the folks in the Chicago area are truly, truly upset. There's been rallies, press conferences. And interestingly enough, Benjamin Crump has entered into the picture, which is, you know, kind of interesting because he's usually the go-to guy for, you know, cop things. But he came forward on this, so I guess it's a good thing. At any rate, we're going to talk to our brother very shortly in that regard, and also how we can support. That, to me, is so, so very important, that we show support for our family, for our brothers and sisters, particularly when you hear the history of this brother. I tell you, it's so much, it was so much information. I had to stop it because when you Google him, you'll see for yourself, family. And again, if you put in justice for Abdul Muhammad, you'll go to his website. But you know, if you just research or search him, there is an abundant amount of information. And he's going to share with us some of the work that, you know, that he has been doing for, you know, quite a while in Detroit. And, you know, we talk about teachers and things of that nature. Well, this brother exemplifies the best. That's all I can really say. And I think you all will agree as well when you, you know, when you kind of hear what he's going to tell us about. So, okay, family, listen, I think what we're going to do is, let me see if I have brother in queue. I think what we're going to do while we're waiting for our brother to call in, I'm going to play a little more of the clip that I was playing. And again, when I come back, I want you to see if you can determine when you think this clip or this conversation may have taken place. Check it out.
Largely react unconsciously, as I believe that the it takes quite a bit of soul searching and deep review of your beliefs and what you see in front of you before you're going to be willing to even begin to accept any guilt. Particularly, I think it's true when you get to someone who may have thought that he was your brother, Paul, and is suddenly surprised to find out that you don't think he is and can't quite understand what he did. He himself as an individual. This distinction between an individual and in a society, I think, is part of the hang-up. And it isn't, I don't believe, in most cases, a conscious effort to first accept the guilt and then say, no, I better say that they used the wrong method. I think you develop ways of dealing in society. One of them is the method you're going to use, and one is the right, if you will, way to go about things. And I don't think that that they've accepted the guilt. That's where the problem is.
Well, doesn't this say something then about our whole church tradition and experience that we have over the whole history of this country? And, well, as they certainly have to rely on their heritage. But doesn't this begin to kind of point out how we've allowed people to grow? To most of these folks have spent their whole life in the church. And we have allowed them to grow old, never having to face themselves or what the Christian experience is all about.
And
they don't understand what the Christian witness is.
And in connection with that, this is why I feel that there is a real mission which falls upon us. I do not see that we can any longer allow people to live these lives. And no, I'm not going to accuse them of anything because people refuse to accept an easy way out. Or, you know, people do that. But for us to continue to cooperate with this kind of a life means that it comes to that point where we must assume responsibility for the condition itself. I can no longer myself
be willing to go along with it and not call attention to the fallacies, not call attention to the lies, and expose it. And then once it is exposed, we have to try to deal with it. But I think that it has to be done.
The thing I think that is, you know, a really crucial thing to that is, and a thing that I think has gone largely unrecognized, is that the manifesto movement, the reparations movement, says not only to the white community, but says to the black community, you have been a participant in a sin, you know, to permit one's humanity to be denied without protesting, you know, without being about the business of trying to reclaim one's humanity, one's manhood is sinful. I mean, again, the scripture says, love God and love your neighbor as yourself. And we, if we as blacks are not about the business of actively loving ourselves and loving our own, and clearly we're lying when we profess to love whites. So I think, you know, there's a whole redemptive thing in the manifesto in terms of black people too. But I think the failure, well, I, just as a question I'd have to ask, if the failure of whites to recognize that aspect of the struggle, if the posture of being, you know, we who are accused rather than we who are with potential brothers presented with an opportunity, you know, to work our way to some just situation together. If that posture is not indeed indicative of the racism in the church that church leaders have, you know, allowed to remain there.
I think one of the problems is, isn't it?
Okay, that's enough of that. However, that voice that you just heard was and is, of course, Dr. Muhammad Ahmed. You need to Google him as well. If you've ever heard of RAM, certainly you will find that interesting if you are one who appreciates our history, particularly the more radical resistance stuff, then definitely check out RAM. The voice you just heard was, of course, our brother, Dr. Muhammad Ahmed. And again, you just Google him or Google RAM, and I'm sure you will find some very interesting things, which is kind of why I really don't have a lot of respect for folks today that be talking a whole bunch of stuff, meaning, you know, you got people that, you know, really be talking a lot of black stuff, or if not black stuff, you know, some other stuff. But yet, if you ask them, you know, what do you do that's more into the activism realm of things, I think you'll find they ain't got much to tell you. But when you Google certain people like H-Rap Brown, Iman Jamil Alameen, or, of course, Dr. Muhammad Ahmed, Bilal Sunni Ali, and others, you get a totally different story. Sekou Odinga, Jalil Montague, it's totally different in comparison. And I'm not trying to knock anybody per se. I'm just saying that we need to know the difference between one thing and the other. And I know everything is not for everyone, and that's okay too. But I'm saying people who, you know, say they are about certain things, well, anyway, we'll get back to that later. Okay, I think I see my sister Crystal Muhammad in queue. We're going to come with her first, I guess, as we're waiting for Brother Abdul Muhammad to join us. Again, he'll be calling in from Chicago to talk to us about what's going on in Chirac. That's what Chairman Freer calls it, Chirac. But between the immigrant situation and now we're going to hear about what's going on with the firing of black principals. He's not the only one. There were several. But his history, what the contributions and work that he has done, I mean, it is just totally unacceptable what they have done to him. And, again, we're going to give him full, you know, opportunity to convey to you family that situation, because this just points out again why we should have our own, and that's part of our motto, our own everything. You're going to hear MWM bring that energy and that whole idea and concept forward. We want our own everything forever. That's a part of our slogan and motto as we proceed now with the development of MWM Universal Movements. Okay, I do see Sister Crystal and Q, and we want to remind everyone that next Saturday, a major rally is happening in Mississippi. You know, it's unfortunate that we have to convey this kind of information to you, but it's also important that we do, because next week, people will also be gearing up for the celebration or commemoration of the Million Man March. And what we're saying is those who, particularly in that area, the southern area, we hope and just, you know, encourage. I mean, I can use all kinds of adjectives, but the bottom line is boots on the ground. There's a rally in Mississippi next Saturday, the 14th, a few days before the commemoration of the Million Man March. Let's make that mean something, family. But I'm going to let Sister Crystal tell you about it. And so, again, we hope you will support in whatever way possible. If you can't go, you can make a donation. You can send a relative or send somebody that might be in the area. But anyway, we'll give you that information right about now. Hold on one moment. Let me open up Sister Crystal's. Hold on. Give me a minute, y'all. Let me open up her.
I think I'm open, Black Power.
Okay, yeah, we got you. We got you. Hey, sis, how you been?
I'm doing so well, Empress Chi, despite the circumstances.
Yeah.
I'm personally well. But emotionally, I'm pissed off. I just got a call right before I was getting ready to call in to you. They have lynched another young sister in Orlando, Florida. I just sent you the link. It's crazy. We're going to have to double back to that. The lynchings are pervasive. What we're dealing with Rasheem Carter is a lynching. What I just sent you a clip on is interesting. You mentioned Benjamin Crump. This is the same young man who works on the investigative team for Benjamin Crump. He goes by the name of Silky Slim. He called me this time last year about Rasheem Carter. And as I'm waiting to, I'm literally grabbing the phone to call into your show, he calls me to tell me about this young sister in Orlando. And what you were just saying when I chimed on about we have to have our own from the schools, our own investigative team, our own media like you're doing now, bringing information. We need our own everything because this system is wicked. Everybody who has any type of understanding of truth and wants to fight for justice needs to be not only paying attention to your broadcast, but needs to make some type of an effort to either make it to Mississippi or to support those who are going to Mississippi to spread the word about what's taking place in Mississippi. But just like how we're in Mississippi today or next week, now we're going to be in Florida. Wherever you're listening from, it could be your city next.
That's right.
The climate in this country is very much hostile towards Black people. It is an arrogance that is going on in this country. There is a marching orders, it appears, to where any type of wicked-minded individual, be it an individual doing a vigilante act of a lynching or police, that they know they're gonna get away with it because who is standing up for Black people?
That's right. Yep. Yep.
So let's talk about Rasheem Carter, which is a prime example of what we're talking about. Rasheem Carter, on October the 2nd, a year and a few days ago, he called his mother. He was a working man. He had a child, a daughter, a young brother in his 20s. He was working at a company as a contract. He got into it with the owner of the company. Whatever the incident, the argument was so intense that he felt threatened that his life was in danger because he immediately called his mother to say, if something happens to me, Stephen Clemens, the man that I work for, is behind it. What was the incident that led to it? We like to speak actual facts. There's some allegations about what typically happens to a black man when they're getting lynched. And what I mean by that, he may have been too friendly to a white girl that worked there.
Right.
And the white boys don't like that in Mississippi. Every last lynching case that we've dealt with as it relates to Mississippi and Texas and Georgia and most of these places has something to do with the black man being too friendly or in association or in a relationship with a white woman. That is the history of America. It has not stopped. But we do know that he contacted his mother and he said his life was in danger. She told him to go to the police department. Not only was his life in danger, he said he was being chased by some white guys in a truck. She told him to go to the police department. She went to the Taylorsville, Mississippi Police Department, told him that some white boys were harassing him and chasing him in a truck. Those no good devils told him to leave, put him out the police department. He said, but my phone's about to die. I don't have any, I only got one bar. They wouldn't even let him use a charger or charge his phone. Well, he's going to, that whole department needs to be shut down. That's a violation of public safety. A consent decree needs to be set on Mississippi. But who's going to do it?
That's
Kamala
right.
Harris over there tap dancing. Joe Biden sitting there looking, see now, who's going to do it? It's going to require black people stepping up, putting enough pressure, and saying enough is enough, and doing whatever we need to do, period, by all means, any means, to stop these lynchings, to stop this police brutality. But the problem is there's only a few of us doing it.
I
just got home yesterday. We were in Gulfport, Mississippi. Because this time last year, just a couple of days before Rasheem Carter was lynched, a young brother, a 15-year-old by the name of Jaheim McMillan, had his brains blown out in front of the Family Dollar store by the police. He wasn't doing anything. The police got behind him in a vehicle. It was four young guys in a car. The police got behind him. They pulled over. A couple of your guys, I guess they got scared and ran. Jaheim stood there. He didn't run. He didn't do anything. Nothing had occurred. Nobody called them. The cop blew this child's brains out in front of the Family Dollar. 15-year-old. And then they chased down the other young men that were in the car, 16, 17, 15, and 15. And do you know that the Gulfport Police Department, in collaboration with the Mississippi Bureau of Investigation, duct taped these young men's hands in a position like a prayer position, had them on their knees, and threatened to put them in a body bag if they told what happened? They held them under $500,000 bonds each. They did not think they were going to get out. They had intention on doing whatever they were going to do to them, but thank God the word got out and Lumumba's daughter, Chokwebem's daughter, the folks in Jackson was able to get the bond to get them out. They kicked them out of school. They had not committed a crime. Nothing happened at the school. And when the mother ran up to the store when her son was murdered, the police body slammed his mom, Katrina, and they took Jaheim McMillan's body from Gulfport, Mississippi to Mobile, Alabama.
Wow.
Yes. This all happened last year. And when the family found out where they took him, they went there, they harassed him, the security and the police in Mobile, Alabama harassed him. And he was found dead. They gave him a hard time about even going to see about him. Why was his body taken to a whole other state, to a whole other city? What is going on? I tell you what's going on. It's a heavy Ku Klux Klanish and culture going on. They're pushing our people around. And our people sitting here on some foolishness, talking about voting for Biden and Trump. Neither one of them care about you. The Democrats ain't doing nothing to help black people. These people went in office with all kind of prayers, promises of what they were going to do about this police brutality. They have not done nothing. Meanwhile, we dealing with lynchings. Lynchings. Children's heads getting blown off by the police. Imagine that, a 15-year-old child. Think of every 15-year-old child that you know. They're defenseless. We are under the ethnic cleansing and genocide. They are slaughtering us. We are being hunted. We are being hunted as prey. P-R-E-Y. Mm-hmm. And we have to stand up. We're going to have there's going to be yet another demonstration on the 1 year. They call it the Angelversary. This is the first time I heard this. They used this terminology for Jaheim McMillan for yesterday, and they're using the same terminology for Rasheem Carter for next Saturday in Taylorsville. It's another word of memorializing what took place. But Rasheem Carter was chased down. He ran to the police department to get help. They put him out of the police department. His phone was dying. He ran over to the Dollar General / Family Dollar to get a charger. There's a witness that says the white boys came in there harassing him in there. That was the last time he was seen. His family was on the way to him. By the time they made it to Taylorville, he was nowhere to be seen. No help from the police. They had to organize their own search and rescue effort. And a month later, in November, his body was found, or I should say, his bones were found scattered throughout the woods.
Right.
And who do we have to investigate this? The Mississippi Bureau of Investigation? And for people who don't know, they are Mississippi's own version of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, who have been investigating crimes against humanity for forever, and they always seem to find, no, there's nothing to see here, no foul play, despite the fact that he called and said he was threatened, that his life was in danger, went to go get help, being chased down the street. The police did nothing. He's missing. And the police says there's no foul play, although they found bones scattered out throughout the woods. They say animals did it. They damn right. Two-legged animals. Some no-good racist devils did this to him. And we hold the state of Mississippi accountable from every elected official that's there, from the local, state, federal level. Doesn't matter. From the district attorney to the police chief, Gabe Horn, to the sheriff, to the state's attorney, to the president of the United States. We hold you all accountable for what took place to Rasheem Carter. And here, as we are galvanizing to get ready to go deal with this, now we have to deal with, you can hung a young sister in her underwear in Orlando, Florida. And they saying it's a suicide, not in her own yard.
Send me that, because I'm looking and I'm not seeing it. So send that to me again, because it's not coming up.
I'm going to retext it to you. I was so upset.
Okay.
I was trying to call in. I got that. Hold on, I'm going to retext it. I'm retexting it.
Okay.
It's in USA Today. It came out, and they're saying so that when the brother called, he told me that the sister was living with another sister, and it's something, he's going to give me more information, but according to the article, she was found in a stranger's yard, hanging, not her own yard, in her underwear. Her breast was exposed. The sister was sexually assaulted. The police are telling people, the police made them take it down off of social media. Every time there's a lynching, they holler suicide. I ran the list down to you guys the last time I was on here. Where's Cory Booker? You passed an anti-lynching law.
All right. So, Sister Crystal.
So we're having this demonstration, I can't say I apologize. It's so upsetting, and it's no time for entertainment. But on Saturday, this Saturday, October the 14th, at 12 noon, we will be outside of the Taylorville Police Department in Taylorville, Mississippi, located at 109 James Street, demanding justice for Rasheem Carter. And we would ask for anyone and everyone who has the capacity to be there with us, to spread the word about what is taking place, to help get any type of support towards this family and towards those who are organizing on these efforts. That's this Saturday coming up.
Ashe. And what time again, sister, and the exact location?
It's at 12 noon in Taylorville, Mississippi, in front of the Taylorville Police Department, located at 109 James Street. It starts at noon. We want to make sure that everybody uses discipline. You know what I'm saying? We ask for everybody to wear black, dress code black. If you're driving, make sure, you know, just you know, we live in a time where, you know, these police are doing a little silly little tactics. So make sure that your vehicle tags are good. You know, you don't want anyone harassing you. But we want to remind people, do not be in fear of these people. See, these people are straight cowards. It's a coward to chase a young man through the town and do this to him, because you thought he had nobody that would have his back and nobody cared about him. But we have to be courageous on our own and stand up at this time. We must.
That's
the young lady named was just, yes, ma'am. There's so much to talk about. I mean, it just threw me off, Queen. Well, I guess that's part of what the strategy of the enemy is.
Yes.
To keep us so traumatized. But you're not going to be able to break our spirit. Only thing that's happening is they're putting more gasoline onto the fire to make us even more vigilant and standing up and fighting for justice.
And you know, Sister Crystal, is interesting because I think we started last week, but this month, interestingly enough, at least, you know, for some on a national level, it is national national domestic violence awareness month. And so we put our own spin on that, and we said that when it comes to domestic violence of black women, we're talking about it from the context of in the land. Domestic in terms of the land, you see. And the example that I give to that so that people can connect the black dots of what I'm saying is when you go to the airport, there's usually two terminals that you can, you know, that you see that you have to select from. One is international and the other is domestic. And so in the bigger scheme of things, domestic means that home land area. That's domestic. And so what we tell our people is, and I sent out earlier, folks, that those of you who got that little message that said protect the black woman by all means, that is because the increase of violence and abuse of our women and girls on a national level, the hook. And I'm getting ready to tell how I've reached out to black males organizations here in Philadelphia. A lot of them talk about anti-violence, and a lot of them get money to do that. But when you examine the work that they do and have been doing when it comes to the issue of violence and abuse of our women and girls, it is little to none. And this is pretty much the pattern all over the country. So when you have these groups and organizations that talk about nonviolence, they'll talk about gun and all of the kinds of things, gang, drugs, but rarely will you hear them say, and definitely won't do, anything that is in reference to the specific types of violence and abuse that is inflicted upon our women and girls on a day-to-day basis. And I'm saying, family, as Sister Crystal just said, you know, we now can begin to bring receipts in terms of who is doing what or not doing what. And you know, there's a tradition that a brother here started, and we're going to implement it again, and it's called the Wall of Shame. Folks,
right.
Got the Wall of Fame and the Hall of Fame. We need to start putting people on the Wall of Shame. Because if folks are talking a lot of yang-yang stuff, and you are not backing it up, or at least trying to, you need to be put on the Wall of Shame. So,
right.
So get ready for that, y'all. Get ready for that. Because we've got to make sure that we stop some of the nonsense and people getting away with what I call really treason, black treason. That's really putting it simply. And for those of you who've been looking at our stuff and stealing it, or trying to, oh, we know who y'all are too, by the way. That's just a sidebar on that. We're going to tell you more about that later because we set that up intentionally to see who was going to try to co-op it and steal it. And Sister Crystal, wait till I tell you about that. But I digress. That's a whole other story. But, okay, Sister. So,
well, you're right.
Tell folks about the website. They can get information at the website. Yep.
That's right. There's a website that you can go to support the efforts and to get more information. And it's Justice, the number 4, Rasheem Carter. And Rasheem is spelled R-A-S-H-E-E-M Carter, C-A-R-T-E-R. Justice, the number 4, RasheemCarter.com. And even if you accidentally put .org, we got that as well. But I wanted to say, Queen, you know, yesterday, and I'm pretty sure they're going to do it next Saturday, but, you know, there was a demonstration, and people came out, and they did the balloon release, and that's beautiful, you know. But I asked the mother, I said, has anyone been arrested yet? Not one soul. You know, not one person held accountable. You know, despite everyone knowing what happened, the police misconduct, the murder, how they tortured those young brothers, how they got put out of school, no one's held accountable. Mm-hmm. We have got to start organizing politically. What is to stop us from recalling these people? Take them out of office.
Right.
Recall them.
Right.
Put somebody else in office. We have got to do more than just do symbol with no substance. And we're not
talking about
anything as it relates to violence. If anything, if you see those with weapons, it is for self-defense because we are dealing with megalomaniac killers. So we have
to start putting
together true efforts to make sure political heads roll. And these are the things that are going to be coming to you in these next few days. We are working. I want to thank you, Empress. Because she doesn't just do this radio show. This lady sits on the phone for hours helping us strategize. We need to not take for granted the type of jewel we're dealing with here. That website didn't just happen out of the thin air. It was her brainchild, and we helped make it happen. But what I'm saying is there's something that everyone can be doing. Don't just leave it to Sister Crystal and Empress Chi because y'all know we're going to do it. But we need help, black people.
That's right. We need
your help. Even if, how about this? Just give us 4 hours a week. That's it. You give the cracker 40 hours a week on the plantation. How about if everybody can give 4 hours a week? and $1 a day.
And listen, I made it even easier. I asked for 1 hour a week. See, I made it so easy. 1 hour, right? And so, and look, it's just incredible, you know, to see and hear the kind of responses that we've gotten in real time. But it's okay. We've re-strategized and figured out how we're going to make it happen nevertheless. But my sister, again,
right.
I want you to get some rest. We got a lot going on this week coming. And again,
yeah.
I thank you for, you know, taking the time to come on and share this information. And again, family, you can go to the website, okay? You can go to the website. You can get all the full information about the brother, what has happened. Sister Crystal broke it down for you pretty succinctly, pretty well. But the bottom line is this brother was murdered. His body parts were found. There's still stuff missing, obviously. His parents, his mother in particular, is heartbroken. Heartbroken. I mean, of course, needless to say. And so, you know, we need to do whatever it is that we can do. And again, black men, October 16th coming. Wouldn't it be a wonderful thing for the brothers in that area that went to the Million Man March? Wouldn't it be wonderful for you all to be there in Mississippi, representing, standing strong, keeping that spirit of the Million Man March in some actual day-to-day, right now kind of mode. And that right, Sister Crystal?
That's right. We need it. We need it.
Absolutely.
And just,
absolutely,
you know, it's a natural thing. One by one, everybody can do something. Everybody can do something. Because it is on our watch right now. Black power.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My sister, again, I thank you so much as usual. Get some rest, please. And, you know, I'll be talking with you, if not tomorrow, on Monday. I have a situation here in Philly that I got to deal with tomorrow that deals with some justice for a young sister. But I'll tell you about that another time. But, again, sister, thank you so much for all that you do. And again, family, I know Sister Kenya is listening. Sister Kenya, if you have a chapter of your organization, make sure you let me know so I can get some information to you. If you have anyone in that area, Sister Kenya is also a powerful sister doing some incredible work.
I forgot to give you our website. If you have that heart and spirit of a freedom fighter, no coons allowed, only freedom fighters, come to www.nbpp.org. nbpp.org. We're looking for good men and good women. Black power.
All right. Thank you, Sister Crystal. All right,
Thank you, family.
Indeed a pleasure and an honor. All right, my sister. All right, family, you heard it right here, live and in living color. As you know, we bring it straight, no chaser, and that's the way it's supposed to be. I mean, you know, what we bring you is the truth and nothing but the truth, and we connect, as we say, the black dots. And we do that because our ancestors are not only demanding it, but I can tell you it's some stuff really getting ready to happen. And with that said, the brother that's coming up next to share with us, I'm telling you, I'm just not only impressed with him as an educator, but as a black man. I mean, I looked at several clips and read several articles and so forth in preparation for this conversation. And I'm telling you, oh, family, I mean, it just filled my heart to see and hear, you know, not just what he was saying, what the brother was saying, but what the people were saying. I mean, that right there for me is really, that tells the real story when it comes to standing up and speaking out. And there were so many who have. And definitely, you know, this brother deserves it. When you take the time to research a little bit about him, and we're going to share some of that information with you as we get ready to proceed. But I can tell you, family, get ready. Take some notes if you need to. But you need to hear and really understand, overstand what you're getting ready to hear, because it's in your city too, y'all. It's right there. Whether you want to admit it or know it, it's definitely right there. But fortunately, or unfortunately, sometimes it takes one or a few things, you know, to happen to a few, one or two or a few people to really have it to hit home, to really, for you to really know and have a better understanding of certain things. And unfortunately, this is what has happened to our brother Abdul Muhammad, who is getting ready to join us now. Share with us, tell us about what's going on in Chicago. And again, if you're in a major city, I guarantee you, you're dealing with the system of white supremacy. I call it off-white supremacy, but also, you know, the historic of institutional racism. And again, what my brother Sabor Muhammad would often say, Eurocation, not education, Eurocation, which is being, you know, pushed down our children's throats every single day, which is why we need our own. Our own. We'll get back to that later. But anyway, I want to take this opportunity to welcome Brother Abdul Muhammad, who, again, is a principal. I still say he's a principal. He's a principal to me, principal in exposing and bringing about some justice. That's a principal right there. And is a principled person, a principled black man. And so, again, you know what we say when it comes to our brothers that's really standing up and doing what black men should. We love you, we appreciate you, and we support you. So without further ado, family, I want you to meet. This is his first time on New Day, but certainly I'm sure it won't be the last because you know what we do. We build relationships and family. But at any rate, Brother Abdul Muhammad is in the house, and we want to welcome him and greet him. Greetings to you, my brother. How are you this evening?
Greetings, my sister Empress Chi. I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, you know, I always say, brother, as long as I can wake up and continue this fight and look for some victories and then get some, I'm just fine.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
So,
well,
brother,
thank you for having me on your show, and I thank your listeners for having me as well. I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Brother, this is what we do. You know, we share information, and we tend to do it firsthand. I don't like a lot of, you know, he say, she say, and all of that. Big ups to Brother Reeve.
Right.
He always comes through whenever, you know, we hear things, particularly in the Chicago and surrounding area. Brother Reeve is always somewhere in the mix and is able to connect us. So big up to Brother Reeve and fellows in Chicago, one of our ambassadors. But Brother, you know what? I'm going to really, in a few minutes, turn the mic over to you because
yes, ma'am.
There's so much to share, and I don't want you to feel rushed or anything like that. If we don't finish tonight, it's okay because this is my show. You know, it's our program, but, you know, I'm the producer here, so we don't have to deal with any restraints or anything of that nature. I've been doing this program now for 14 straight years. And
yes,
so,
ma'am.
We're good. But anyway, family, again, I'm going to just ask the brother a few questions now, but I really want to give him the opportunity to just kind of just go share, provide us with insight. We're going to start off, though, with brother, please provide a little bit of history about you, if you would, please.
Yes, ma'am. Well, my sister and your dear listeners, you know, my name is Brother Abdul Muhammad. I am a member of the Nation of Islam, and I've been in the Nation of Islam since I graduated from high school. And I was actually at the Million Man March. You know, I had just graduated from college after the Million Man March. I had just graduated from college and had moved to Chicago, believe it or not, and was a part of the brothers in Chicago in the nation who were at the Million Man March. But I've been an educator for the last 29 years, my sister, in the city of Chicago. So my entire adult life has been dedicated to the education of black children. I started at Muhammad University of Islam in Chicago, which is the Nation of Islam private school. And in 1999, I transitioned to Chicago Public Schools. I'm sure your listeners are very familiar with Chicago and the type of environment that we're dealing with in the city of Chicago, especially in the public school system. So this was the environment that I was in every environment that I've been blessed to go into. I have worked to transform the lives of black children in those environments. I started out on the west side of Chicago at a school called Westinghouse, and from there I transitioned to the south side of Chicago to a school called CBS Chicago Vocational. From there, Simeon, another school on the south side. I was awarded as a teacher. I was awarded the Teacher of the Year Award. So I won the Teacher of the Year Award. I was also featured in Who's Who Among American High School Teachers for four consecutive years. I was nominated twice for the Golden Apple Award as an educator. I've received numerous awards for my work in the field of education. In 2012, I became an assistant principal here in Chicago at a school called Percy L. Julian on the south side of Chicago. And again, when I went into Percy L. Julian, my dear sister, we're talking about a school that's located on 103rd in Chicago, for those who are familiar, then you know that's a very rough area in the city of Chicago. I went into Percy L. Julian. When I got there, there were low expectations, low academic expectations. There were constant conflicts and fights, you know, between students, parents coming up to the school trying to jump on students, people coming up out of the neighborhood trying to jump on students, all types of negative activity. And the one of the last things on the minds of our people, children, was education. Well, at Percy Julian, in the time that I was there, I worked with the staff and the team there, and we completely turned the school around from constant regular fights and low academic expectations to where we raised the academic expectations, we raised the graduation rates, and we lowered the fights almost down to nothing. Now, it wasn't as easy as I'm talking about it, but we worked every day to make that happen. Every school I've walked into, I've been blessed to transform that school for the better for black children in the city of Chicago, the very same city that you all watch and hear about on television, and people make it appear as though it is hopeless to change our children. I'm here to tell you that it is not hopeless. They need same type of love that the brothers received at the Million Man March. They need the same type of love that the sisters received at the Million Woman March. They need that transformative love, and when that love is present, then the change that we all say that we want, then that change takes place. So at Percy L. Julian, I was able to make that change working with the team there at the school. When I left Percy L. Julian, I went to a school in Chicago that's named after a great black civil rights leader. Her name is Nancy B. Jefferson. She was from the west side of Chicago, and she was a freedom fighter in Chicago for our people. But I went to her school. The unique thing about – I went to her school as assistant principal. The unique thing about Nancy B. Jefferson High School is that it's an alternative school that is located inside of the juvenile detention center in the city of Chicago, which means, my sister, that every student, young person, 17 or under, that committed a series of crimes, enough crimes to get arrested and locked up, they went to this school. So at this particular school were all of the young people that were locked up in the facility. So every school I walked into prior to this, I was able to transform. I was able to engage with the students. I was able to work with them to raise the academic expectations. And when I got to Nancy Jefferson, Nancy B. Jefferson High School, then it was no different. I went into that school as a strong black man. And now I need your listeners to understand that this school is 85% black boys. I'm going to say that again. The school that I was in, which was the school where all the young people in Chicago who were incarcerated attended, 17 and under. My first day there, I was informed that it was 85% black boys, 14% Latino, and 1% other. In fact, there was one white student in the entire facility during the time while I was there. So now, my brothers and sisters who are listening, the same way that the students love me at every other school I've ever walked into, at this point I have thousands of students who I've taught that have love and respect for me as their teacher in the city of Chicago. The same love they had for me at every school. The students at Nancy B. Jefferson had that same love for me, including the one white student. I'm just going to be real with you. When I was there, I was able to engage with those young brothers in the juvenile detention center school. And you could imagine, your listeners could imagine, what type of environment and low expectations teachers had in a school like Nancy Jefferson, Nancy B. Jefferson. If you go to a school, we're familiar with the movie Cooley High, right?
Yes.
And there
yes.
are schools that are like that, right, in Chicago and every major city. And you have in those schools staff members who have low expectations for black students. Imagine the level of expectation in a school like Nancy B. Jefferson. Well, that's the school that I was in. And in that school, we raised the X for those students, and we raised the graduation rate. I'm telling you what happened at Nancy Jefferson, which is what I've done at every school. And I know this is a bit long of an introduction. From Nancy Jefferson, we can get more into the details. From Nancy Jefferson, I went to a school on the west side of Chicago, another school that was neglected, that was in bad shape, Douglas High School. And I was the principal of Douglas. And then from Douglas High School, I became the principal of a school in Chicago called Lindblom High School, which is one of the top schools in Chicago. And that is where all of my problems began. Well, I'm not going to say where they began, but where they manifested in a greater way in the city of Chicago. Yeah. So I'll leave it at that, and then we can kind of go into specific details.
Okay. So, oh, wow, it's so much. But I'm going to fast forward just a bit to go to just tell us what is it that has now happened, and then we'll go into the why.
Yes, ma'am. So my sister, after 25 years of my stellar educational career, working in the most at-risk, adverse environments with our children and transforming those environments. Right. When I was selected to be the principal at Lindblom High School, I need your listeners to understand Lindblom is the ranked number 8 school in the city of Chicago, and is ranked number 22 in the state of Illinois. But it's a school that's 75% black. It's located in Englewood in Chicago, which is a black community in Chicago, where Lil Durk and all these rappers are from. King Von, right. All these little rappers, Steve Keith, they're all from Englewood in Chicago.
Right.
The Black LSC in June of 2022, the Black LSC elected me to be the principal. And the there were people within Chicago public schools. When I say people, we're talking about school officials, some of them white, some of them Latino, and unfortunately some of them black. School officials within Chicago Public Schools did not like the choice of the black LSC in a black school in a black neighborhood. So when they found out that Abdul Muhammad was selected to be the principal, the school officials, one's name is Devon LaRosa. Another one is, I'm trying to remember her name. Well, it'll come to me in a second. One's name is Devon LaRosa. Her name is Kinshasa Williams Ford and others. They tried to convince the black LSC not to select me as the principal of Lindblom High School. Now, I need your listeners to understand what type of plantation that Chicago is and the level of corruption that we're witnessing in Chicago. Lindblom, like I told you, is a black school. It's in a black neighborhood. It's a black LSC that selected me. But the school has never had a black principal since the school reopened in 2005. I'm going to say it again. We're talking about a black school, 75% black, a black LSC in a black neighborhood elected a black man to be the principal, and this school has not had a black principal since the school reopened in 2005. Every principal since the school reopened has been a white male. So now they went from 13 years or however many years of white male leadership, right? Another fact is that the staff at Lynn Bloom, as you know, the white principal hired white teachers, majority. So the staff at Lynn Bloom over these black children in this black neighborhood with a black LSC, local school counselors, what LSC stands for, they had 90% of the teachers were white. So this is what I walked into, my sister. I walked into a plantation, and when Abdul Muhammad was selected, a strong, unapologetically black man, never going to apologize for being who I am. Never.
Yeah.
When I walked into that school, not even when I walked in, because I hadn't walked in yet. When I was selected, when my name was on the list, then that is when all of the problems started. So the school officials, Mr. LaRosa and Kinshasa Williams Ford, they tried to convince the black LSC members not to select me as the principal in a black school, right? The black LSC members stood by their decision to select me as the principal. And the LSC officials, you know, they voted unanimously for me to be the principal. When that happened, the officials in CPS, Chicago Public Schools, tried to do everything they could to delay that. They said, well, start the process over again. They already went through 11 candidates, and I was the finalist. Start the process over again. They said, we'll get new candidates. So they did everything they could to prevent me from walking in the door. On July 7th, that was my first day at Lynn Bloom. And I had to fight just to get there because there was so much resistance for a black man to be a black principal over black children in a black school with a black LSC. We fought just for me to walk in the door. When I got there on July 7th, the Chicago Public School officials were unsuccessful in turning the LSC around. So once I got there, their new strategy was to try to undermine all the work that I did while I was there. So the Mr. LaRosa, the I'm not going to say he's black, he's a Latino with dark skin, I'll say that. Mr. LaRosa and other Chicago Public School officials worked with seven white teachers at Lynn Bloom and one black school clerk. And those seven white teachers and that one, you know, it's always one of us that joins the bandwagon of this level of insanity. Those seven white teachers told over 83 lies to the Chicago Public Schools Law Department about me. And on March 31st, the Chicago Public Schools Law Department, which is headed by a white woman by the name of Kelly Tarrant, removed me from the position of principal at Lynn Bloom High School. So that's the kind of quick version. Of course, there's a lot of different layers to that. But again, I was the first black principal since the school reopened, and I was the second black, they only had two black male principals in the 100-year history of the school. And we're talking about a black school, brothers and sisters, but this is the level of corruption that we're dealing with in the city of Chicago. And you can get more information on the website, justiceforabdulmuhammad.com. You can sign the petition. We have a petition on that website, justiceforabdulmuhammad.com. You can get more background information. And I have to say this, my sister and your dear listeners, I'm not the only principal. Chicago Public Schools targeted nine other black principals. I'm going to say this again to all of my black people that's listening. I am not the only one. I stood up and I fought this corruption. And when I stood up, then other black principals came out of the woodwork, and we found out through the Freedom of Information Act that there were other principals removed, targeted like I was, and removed by Chicago Public Schools as well. So this is why we're asking you all to join this fight, because this is the greatest fight that we can be involved in. And this, the fight is the fight for the minds of our children. It's the greatest fight, because this fight represents the future of us as a people. And as my sister said, I need everybody who's listening to understand, if you are a true revolutionary, then the word revolution means to make a change, to change.
That's right.
And
that's
it,
right.
Is knowledge that changes us. It's knowledge, right, that transformed Malcolm Little, Detroit Red, Dirty Red, into Malcolm X. It was knowledge that made that transformation. It's knowledge. It's the light of knowledge that transforms us. The real,
that's
revolution,
right,
is the revolution of the mind. All the greats that we look up to as revolutionaries, Fred Hampton was a revolutionary, but Fred Hampton wasn't ignorant. Fred Hampton,
yes,
had knowledge, and all the Black Panthers that were with him and the leaders of the Black Panther Party were all enlightened and had knowledge. These were not ignorant brothers and sisters. So
that's right.
The real revolution is the changing of the mind with knowledge, and this is what they're afraid of. With our children, and this is why they work so hard to remove black leaders, effective black leaders like myself, from in front of black children.
And you know, I just, before we go to our phone lines, callers, if you have a question or a comment for our brother, you can press one now. We're going to get ready to engage in that for a few. But I just a couple of sidebars. So I got a chance, Brother Abdul, to look at a couple of the clips, a couple of the videos,
yes,
read,
ma'am,
some of the articles. And Brother, again, I just applaud, you know, the work that you've done. Family, this brother was... I mean, so the children talked about him, the fact that he was asked to escort the children for the inauguration of the mayor. I mean, they selected,
that's right,
him to do that. The other thing that I learned in watching was, of course, that as a part of the daily routine or the daily interaction, the children were given each day at the beginning of school a black history lesson or a black history tidbit.
Yes,
and,
ma'am,
you know, and they were so I watched this. They were so, they were like, and I mean, children, you could tell when children are really, you know, excited and motivated about something, because they don't get excited and motivated about most stuff, not in this system, you know, except some crazy stuff. But the things,
right,
that I literally saw in their faces was real. You know, and
that's
so, family, I'm telling you, this is just sinful, and that puts it mildly. And one last thing before we go to our callers, this is right up my kind of area, and when I heard this, it really struck a nerve, because I've been to Chicago. We've done several sessions there, actually. One was called State of Emergency in dealing with the issue of violence and abuse of our women and girls there in Chicago, as
yes,
well as,
ma'am,
in other cities. But we came there specifically because of a report that we had gotten about, you know, black women being found in houses or in alleys or whatever, you know, a whole bunch of them. And so,
right,
we begin to realize that this was really going on. But my point is, when I heard about the young student who reported that she was being sexually harassed by an official in the school, and they were attempting to accuse you of not reporting it.
Right, right.
And then when I heard the brother, and forgive me that I don't remember his last name, Troy.
Troy
LaRaviette. Yeah, man. I was like, Pam, y'all have, if, please take the time, because, again, this is happening to our brother in Chicago. If not this, some other similar stuff is or will be happening to any of our people that's really making a difference in our community. And so you need to if you're not familiar with some of the warning signs or some of the tactics that these folks do, again, this is classic with what you will see in observing or watching some of what has been presented. And lastly, before we go to our lines, remember what Dr. Francis Quest-Welsing taught us and Dr. Neely Fuller continues to teach us, and that is if you do not understand the system of white supremacy, everything else will only confuse you. What more can I say? Okay, let's go to our lines. Caller, you are at 3063. Your mic is open. Welcome to the segment, A New Day.
Peace and blessings.
Greetings.
Peace and blessings. This is Sister Kenya.
I'm sorry, what is your name, Sister
Kenya?
Kenya Akbar. Hey, Sister Kenya. Yes. How's my sister?
Mm-hmm. I'm blessed. I'm very blessed, and I am really enjoying your show tonight. I want to say something to your listeners. Injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere, and it is critical that we listen to these sisters. Just because it's happening in Mississippi, it does not mean it is not related to us. We are fighting, as you said, a system. And when you're fighting a system, you must enact a system to cure those systemic woes. We have to fight fire with fire. So I really, really appreciate all the work that you are doing, Sister Queen Empress Chi. This work is very, very relevant, and it is the answer, and it is different. Brother Abdul Muhammad in Chicago, I had to call my sister from New Era, Chicago. I don't know if you're familiar with New Era, but I had to call her and get her in on this because I wanted her to hear what you were saying, and she is validated through that everything that you're saying is 100% true. You have been blackballed, but brother, we are going to do something about it. We are going to connect, and we are going to rally behind you, and what we need to do is remove people from office. We've got to change the politics. You know, we have to play their game the way that they play it, and it can be done. Maintain your hope. Continue to connect, because there is viable power in connection. Those individuals connect. I know you're Nation of Islam, but connect with New Era Chicago. I want to make sure that we get your information. Let us know how we can be in contact with you, because we have power in numbers. We have, Malcolm X said it best, we do not lack intellect, we lack organization. We have to be organized in order to do what needs to be done, and it's going to have to be different. These black prints, the black printed queen, she has the black print that Brother Zeke out of Detroit, New Era Detroit has. These are the models that we need to be implementing where we're at, everybody on this call, where we're at, and we must be consistent. I complimented Empress Chi today. It's her consistency, because the drug dealer don't take a day off. You understand? That's right. The pimp don't take a day off. These people, these politicians are not taking days off. They get up and they do it every day, and we have to be consistent. So be consistent, my people. Thank you for this opportunity. Peace and love, and please make sure we get the brothers' information.
Absolutely. Thank you, Sister Kenya. And Sister Kenya's calling in from the Ohio area. But as she indicated, the organization that she is a part of, New Era, has chapters in several cities, including Detroit and Chicago. So, you know, again, we're connecting the black dots, as we say we would and do. Thank you, Sister Kenya. Okay, let's go to caller. You are at 8521. Your mic is open. Welcome to this segment, A New Day.
Yes, thank you for allowing me to share a few syllables tonight. Assalamu alaikum to Brother Abdul Muhammad. This is the Sheikh Al Imam Akbar. I'm one of the leaders from amongst the Black Panthers and a leader from amongst the Black Muslims. And what is being done to you is a railroad Chicago style. And I'm very familiar with the city of Chicago from Halstead to State Street, from Lakeshore, I mean, Black to Chicago Heights. And I grew up on the Muhammad Speaks going from Dan Ryan all the way to O'Hare Field. So I'm here to tell you, brother, you've got a big fight. But notice there's a pattern to how they try to exterminate. They try to make you expendable. And I say to you, Brother Muhammad, and I say to you, Sister Filet, I'm very familiar. We met a few times out in Philly and in New York, and I think potentially these two. And we're going to team up with Crystal Muhammad, and we're going to Taylorsville, Mississippi. I want to extend that invitation to all revolutionaries and all concerned citizens to be in Taylorsville, Mississippi on October 14th. Now, to you, Brother Muhammad, I will say this, that they suppressed a man that most people don't know about, has kind of unheard of. The father of Emmett Till, Louis Till, came out of Illinois. He was like a Muhammad Ali kind of guy. Got into it with Mamie Till, and they told him that you either go in jail or you go in the army. So Louis Till said, well, I'll go to the army. Went to the army, and they shipped him to Italy and set him up, vilified him with a white woman. Then they took Louis Till and tortured him. This is the Italian government, U.S. government consent. And then they lynched Louis Till. Then they suppressed the information for 77 years, as Filet and Brother Muhammad and audience.
Yes,
77
sir.
Years they have suppressed the name of Louis Till, right there in Chicago, of Louis Till, that Mamie Till taught this for 50 years, never mentioned a syllable on Louis Till. What's my lady here? Whoopi Goldberg, entire documentary on Emmett Till, not one syllable on Louis Till. And it goes on and on. Malik Zulu Shabazz, I think they went track down the person for that was supposedly responsible for Emmett Till's being tortured and executed. Not a syllable on Louis Till. So I say to you, beloved, the same thing was done to Alfred Daniel Williams King. And most said, who is that? That's the brother of Martin Luther King, was the recruiter and the organizer and the black revolutionary. That's what I'm trying to get to. The black revolution that's in Louis Till, the black revolution that's in Alfred Daniel Williams King, who had his own church, and they killed him out back in the swimming pool. The alphabet boys got to him. But I'm saying to you that the black revolution that's in you is no wise different than the black revolution that was in Fred Hampton said, I am what a revolutionary. The Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad said, I am what he said, a revolutionary, and black revolution is the only solution. And that's what I'm saying to you, that black revolution, when Adam Clayton Powell was booted out of the Congress, right? And then he left the Congress, went straight to UCLA, and taught a lecture called Black Power and Black Revolution. And I said, if you unite on that principle, Brother Abdul Muhammad, I think we can win against Chicago. They cannot beat a made-up mind when you come to Chicago.
That's right.
So
yes, sir.
I love you so much, Abdul Muhammad. I pray Allah for your success and the success of the Black Panthers and the Black Muslims working together, because we got Redemption Week coming right at the tail of the Million Man March right here in Washington, D.C., from the 16th through the 21st, Redemption Week, seeking one collective solidarity and one voice on reparations. If there's no reparations in 2023, why should there be a black vote in 2024?
Ashe.
So with all things combined, Ashe, Sister Filet, we love you so much. We miss you. I haven't seen you in a while, but you're teamed up with my dear sister and comrade, Sister Crystal Muhammad, and we love her so much. And we are a team, and all the Panthers are being brought in together, the Black Revolutionaries, the Black Panthers, Taylorsville, and all of them will be rallying with a brother, Robert Turner from Baltimore now, but he is the Tulsa. And the last piece of information I'm trying to say to you is that we did a full, complete, and entire investigation in Tulsa. They told me the massacre had killed 300 people. I think it's on record for 300 people were slaughtered and massacred in Tulsa in 1921. But when the Black Panther education, the Black Panther investigation shows that well over 3,000 people, and they dropped bombs from the air, meaning the city government was in on it, Tulsa City. Tulsa County government was in on it, and the government of Oklahoma was on it. But the other thing is, brother and sister, the U.S. government, the U.S. government, the same U.S. government that suppressed Louis Steele and Alfred King, and the same government suppressed the information, and the same government consented them to get airborne to drop those things. It was the open consent of the federal government to drop those bombs in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So we love you so much. We hope you continue to grow and to go. And we hope that the success, we know it's going to be successful, because I believe Abdul Muhammad has the truth on his side. And
yes, he does.
It says, "Qad aflahat al-mu'minuna," that the sincere, righteous believers must eventually win through. Assalamu alaikum. Black power, black power.
Well, Islam, my brother.
Allahu Akbar.
Thank you, my brother.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you. Black power. Wa alaikum salam. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
All right, family. Well, as you can tell, you know, I love our program. I love my New Day family, Brother Abdul. As you can tell, you know, our people are, you know, just, hey, what can I say? I mean, they said it. They said it.
Right,
much love and respect. Yo, yeah, no doubt. All right, family, again, if you have a question or comment, you can press one now because we're going to get ready to close this session out. Brother Reeves is going to be calling in a few moments. I just spoke with him. He's in Atlanta. He's going to give us a brief update on what went on this weekend with the Reparations Conference in Atlanta. But right now, family, we are talking with Brother Abdul Muhammad. Our principal, I'm going to say our principal, they can say or do whatever they want to, but, you know, we say we believe in Kujichagulia, not just at Kwanzaa time. We believe in it in terms of from the principal concept to apply it any time, any day, any way. And so, again, we're declaring Brother Abdul as our principal, one of our principals, okay? But going back to you, my brother, so, again, let us recap with what it is. Oh, before you do, and I want folks to know how they can sign on to the petition, because even though you may not be in Chicago, family, that's okay. It's really the spirit and the energy. And we know Chicago family going to do. I just got some texts that came in from some Chicago folk, queen in the house, from the Aisha Sisterhood, and some other folks are calling in or texting me. So I already know that, you know, Chicago family is going to definitely be on point. I'm going to check in with Chairman Fred later on this week as well. But in the meantime, brother, before you give more information again about your website and how they can sign on to the petition, I just want to go back for one moment in regards to the young sister's report of being molested or you know, sexually harassed.
Yes,
a young student. Could you just tell us a little bit about that?
Thank you, my sister. So, sister, just to inform your listeners, as I said, when I was selected the principal, the black principal of this black school with all these beautiful black children in this black community, there were seven white teachers in the school and one black clerk that did everything they could to lie to the Chicago Public Schools officials to have me removed. One of those lies that the clerk, her name is Lakonda McDaniel, the black clerk. I don't want to call her black, but she has black skin. this woman lied to the Chicago Public Schools Law Department and said that that a student came to me about being sexually harassed by a security guard, and I did not report it, which, you know, of course, is against the Chicago Public Schools policy, when in fact the reality of the situation, and the thing about this, and I need all of your listeners to understand, every word that I am telling you I have evidence and documentation to prove everything that I'm saying. I'm not sharing with you what I just think, you know, brothers and sisters, they did me wrong and it wasn't fair. That's not what I'm telling you. I'm telling you that these seven white teachers and this one black clerk told over 83 lies. And we have the documents to prove every lie that they told, including this one. So I have the Chicago Public Schools report where the report of sexual harassment, alleged sexual harassment, was recorded. And we have the names of the four staff members that the student went to report alleged sexual harassment. I have that report. I know the names of the staff members, and Chicago Public Schools knows the names of the staff members, and none of those staff members is Abdul Muhammad. But the one staff member who lied on me, LaConda McDaniel, the black clerk, she is one of the people that the student went to and reported the alleged sexual harassment. She is the one that lied to the law department and said that I didn't report it. So this is the level of corruption that Chicago Public Schools is involved in, that they know for a fact that I am 100% innocent, but because they did not want me in front of black children, they accepted the false testimony from seven white teachers and one black clerk and used that false testimony to remove me from the school. Now, Sister Empress, when I found out about this situation, it had already been reported to four staff members at Limbloom, and they did absolutely nothing. They did not follow the CPS policy. They did not call DCFS. They did not report it. When the information came to me, not from the student, but from another staff member, I immediately made the report and started the investigation. Immediately, the day that I got the report, the minute I got the report, I started the investigation. And the next day, I met with either the next day or 2 days or a couple of days later, I met with the parent of the particular student who made the report.
Yeah.
And I have an email from February 5th, if I remember correctly, of this year, where the parents emailed me thanking me for meeting with them and starting the investigation. Now, Chicago Public Schools has all of this information. They know that I'm the one that started the investigation, or that I directed my assistant principal to reach out to start this investigation. They know the names of the staff members who did not report sexual harassment. They know that I met with the parents. They have the same email and information that I have. But they're so corrupt, and they did not want me in front of those black children, so they accepted the false testimony of the seven white teachers and the one black clerk. But
wow.
We have the evidence to prove everything that we're saying is true. But yeah. What we need, brothers and sisters, now, brothers and sisters, you all know, I'm not the first black man that has been lied on, and I will not be the last black man. So this is not like a unique situation. Oh, this is the first brother that's ever. No, I'm not the first brother or sister that's been lied on by an institution that's rooted in white supremacy. But what we need you all to do, who are listening, is to respond so that we can expose the corruption of the Chicago Public Schools. And the way we want you all to respond, we want you to go on justiceforabdulmuhammad.com. You can watch all the videos. You can get all the background information. You can share those videos on social media. You can share those videos on Mayor Brandon Johnson's Twitter page, on the Mayor Brandon Johnson's Facebook page, because the mayor has the power to correct this situation that is going on in Chicago, but the mayor has chosen not to do it. But we can put pressure on the mayor and expose these seven white teachers and this one black clerk and the other Chicago public school officials, expose their corruption. You can go on justiceforabdulmuhammad.com. You can sign that petition, share it with your friends, get background information. If you choose to make a donation, there's a donation for a GoFundMe right there on justiceforabdulmuhammad.com. You don't have to wait. You can pull out your phone right now and go on justiceforabdulmuhammad.com and sign that petition and share it with friends and family. And you have the background videos on that website that will share with you what's going on in the city of Chicago.
Ashe, ashe. One last question, my brother. What is it that you want? And what I mean, of course, you know, one of us to sign the petition and all that. But in terms of the city, these people, this system, whichever you prefer, what is going to be justice for you?
That's a great question, sister. There is, let me say this real quick, and I'm going to get back to what I want. But I have to say this. Again, just so you all can understand the level of corruption and the type of plantation that we're dealing with in the city of Chicago. When I got to Limbloom, again, it's a black school with 90% white teaching staff. When I was selected the principal, one of our black parents came and met with me in July of 2022, and she said, "Principal Muhammad, you know, my daughter goes here, and every year, they don't do anything for Black History Month." I'm going to say that again. This parent came to me and told me in a black school, in a black neighborhood, that every year that these 90% white teachers in this black school don't do anything for blacks. She said, "Principal Muhammad, will you do something for the children for Black History Month?" So you all know I had to do it. I was going to do it anyway.
Right.
But this is the type of corruption. This is the type of plantation. I need you all to understand what is happening to black children because they do not have black leaders in their schools. And I got to say this, sister, because I'm not the only principal that's been removed. There have been others. My sister, who was removed from Harriet Tubman Elementary School, Dr. Kimberly Gibson, when she got there, she did the same thing I did. When I got to Limbloom, I was holding the white teachers accountable. What do you mean, Muhammad, holding the white teachers accountable? When I got to Limbloom, I found out that there were three white teachers at Limbloom that had thousands of dollars of black people's money in their personal bank accounts. I'm going to say it again for you who did not hear, those in the back that weren't listening. There were white teachers, three white teachers, that had thousands of dollars of black people's money in their personal bank accounts.
Wow.
They were upset that I came in the school and found out that they were stealing the money. They had the money in their bank account. And I made them take black folks' money out of their bank account and put the money in the school's bank account.
Wow.
One of the teachers who was stealing money from the football games, her name is Christina Davis. She was the athletic director. And her and the same black clerk who lied on me, LaConda McDaniel, they were in this plan to not turn in the money from the football games. When I found out, I demanded. And do you have the evidence? I have the evidence for every word that is coming out of my mouth. I demanded that they turn the money in that they were not turning in that was in Ms. Davis' bank account, that they turned the money into the school. And when I started to hold those white teachers accountable, that is another reason that they wanted me to be removed. You would think that the officials in Chicago Public Schools would be like, "Man, he's doing what he's supposed to do." But no, they were upset that I was making the white teachers turn in the money that they were stealing from black children and black families. This is the level of corruption. Kimberly Gibson at Harriet Tubman, same thing. She was holding the white teachers accountable. And the white teachers at Harriet Tubman sent her all kind of racist text messages, called her out of her name, called her the N-word, saying, "We're going to get rid of you." And what did Chicago Public Schools do? Did they defend the black principal that was being called the N-word by white teachers at a school named after Harriet Tubman? Absolutely not. They worked to remove the black principal. The same thing happened to my brother, Gerald Morrow, who was at a school, Dunbar High School, in the Bronzeville neighborhood, the historic Bronzeville neighborhood in Chicago. This brother was putting in programs for black children, barbering programs, cosmetology programs, trade programs, so that our children could get a trade before they left high school. And Chicago Public Schools removed this brother in December of last year. And they still have not told his man what he's done. He's been out of school for almost a year and don't even know what he's done, what he's so-called been charged with. This is the level of corruption. We talk about the school-to-prison pipeline. You have black principals like myself, like Dr. Gibson, like Gerald Morrow, who are destroying the school-to-prison pipeline. And Chicago Public Schools is trying to rebuild it by removing us from the schools. this is what we're dealing with, brothers and sisters. So this is why we want you to go on justiceforabdulmuhammad.com and sign the petition, because the greatest fight is not the fight that happened in Montgomery, Alabama. That was a great fight. That was a great fight. I can't lie. But that's not the greatest fight, brothers and sisters. The greatest fight is the fight for the minds of black children. How
That's
are you
right.
in a black school and they don't have a Black History Month program? And the parent is begging me to do it.
So my brother,
I
want you to hold that point because we're going to have to bring you back. But I see Brother Reeve is in queue. I want to get him in
yes,
real
ma'am.
Quick. But I'm going to get you
okay.
back here because we're going to have some more conversation about this and what we need to do
yes,
in some other kind of ways to make sure that our children are educated. Family, if you are on your internet, you need to switch over to the podcast, 319-527-6189. Again, switch over to the podcast because we're going to continue the conversation, but you're going to lose that internet stream in a minute or two, so switch over to the podcast. Call in 319-527-6189. We're getting ready to go to our brother Reeve, and Fellows is in the house. Hey, Brother Reeve.
What's going on, Queen? I'm sorry, Empress.
You know how you be. You had a good day today.
Yeah, and I got a chance to see brothers and sisters from all over that were dealing with reparations with different ideologies and philosophy to get on one page, which, you know, that is nothing but spiritual, to look at the different. There was a lot of things going on. I'm Ado, so I'm somebody else, and I got a strategy. But today they all unified around a conversation and said that we're going to look at how do we get on one accord, and I think it's the Afro's. What is it called? I gotta think what is the name that they're using. That's a camaraderie. It'll come to me short. Afro Descent Nation, I think that's what it is.
Right.
And I'm
right.
mocking
mm-hmm.
them. But yeah, so, but it just was powerful to hear the speakers and everybody lay down what they thought and just tied together, didn't cross pollinate, didn't disrespect anybody speaking. So Brother Salih mm-hmm. Muhammad and his wife, when they first started in the UN, they said you had to go 7 years to be there to be respected.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they let
mm-hmm.
us know they've been going for 17 years straight.
Right.
Working with the UN. So we had a very powerful tomorrow. They'll be back getting some energy. But it was off the chain, just the knowledge, the history. And
mm-hmm.
Prince Osiel's son spoke today, and young person say, hey, the gig is up. We ain't taking
That's
no
right.
prisons. We ain't trying to play with these people. We not taking a weak position, and that their time is up, and we're going to bring it to them. So you hear the young brother mm-hmm. saying that. And so it's just a powerful, powerful gather. Again, to see all these years,
mm-hmm.
I've been watching reparations, then Cobra, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But today was like, wonder what you had. It's not either or, it's both. We're going to use them by any means necessary, the conversation.
Yes, yes.
And so I just had a great spiritual time looking at unity and just sitting back and watch God work.
All right. Well, Brother Reeve, I'm going to bring you back next week because then you can give us a real full overview on
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're going to attend some sessions tomorrow. But we still have Brother Abdul with us, so I just wanted to greet him real quick and thank you again. Yeah, you still there?
Hey, brother, how you doing, black man?
Hey, brother, how you doing, my brother? Peace and blessings.
Man, I'm black, magnificent. Sister Empress, I don't know if he shared with you, but we was at the school board meeting. He went up, and the brother went up to talk about his older principles. We went up there
mm-hmm.
behind each other, and we shut it down and just showed the energy, black men, black women, West Side, South Side Street.
Yeah.
And we just
That's
laid
right.
it out. It was just a powerful hit to see that they know it ain't business as usual.
We went
some gangster. And but also the brother forgot to mention, the brother Dunbar, he brought an aviation class to the school and got a young man graduated, I think, at 19. He is now licensed. That's deep.
Wow.
And so, yes, there's a conspiracy to kill black boys and men. That's just
yes,
what it is.
Yes.
And then, as you know, with this whole new LGBTQ and this whole new same sexual thing. It's all behind. Also, if you can't have strong men who are in principal positions and holding on, it's going to be hard for them to push that agenda with a strong black man in that place that believes in family from a different philosophy.
Right.
But what's really so powerful about it, a 1991 Mello Sam, my mentor, wrote the Black History Bill for the state of Illinois. And 20 years later, Barbara Bird Bennett came and wrote a curriculum. I was part of that team. And we met with her before they took her out. Even though she went to jail, she wrote a curriculum that had been dealt with in 20 to 30 years. It was a powerful curriculum. The minute she got locked up, they stopped it. Right now in Illinois, the LGBTQ, they took 1 year to pass the bill that's in the schools, and the Black History Bill is sitting in the drawer, the Black History curriculum.
Hey.
That is one curriculum that's no longer being used. And when brothers like Muhammad come in, that can lay foundation. So it is not being implemented. It's a statewide law since 1991. They have been violating Black history law, and it's for the state, not just for Chicago. So we at a war.
Well, you know, as quiet as it's kept, and it's not going to be quiet now, 2024, the Million Woman World March will be hitting the road as part of our organizing strategy. And you know we're coming to Chicago because you're one of our sister cities. So I'm glad to hear some of these issues, because when we come and have our rally and so forth, these are some of the issues and some of the other things we're going to be bringing to the forefront in support of our brothers and sisters there in our what we call sister cities. We have our own sister cities that we're developing our chapters, affiliations, and our campaigns and family tomorrow. You'll be able to join us for the final session for Million Women March Week this year straight. And we will announce on October 25th our campaign for there to be a national holiday for a black woman. How y'all like, how you like us now? Okay, we have Dr.
That's
Martin Luther King, which we love, of course. And we also have Juneteenth now, so everybody got something to celebrate. But there ain't nothing for a black woman, y'all. There's going to be now. So we're bringing that campaign. We want our family to support, just like they support for the other two holidays that's being recognized for our people, in the time for there to be a holiday for a black woman, brothers. What y'all think?
Hey, we know first mother, first teacher, mother land, mother wit.
There we go. All right, let's balance this thing out. And so, family, tomorrow we'll be talking more about that. And, again, that's going to be part of our campaign for next year when we bring forward the Million Women World March. Well, listen, family, we've run out of time. We have in with us a new family member, extended family member. His name is Principal. Hey, Brother Reed, we said we don't care what they're talking about. He's our principal.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me tell you, this brother, everywhere he's been in Chicago, he's turned the school around. That's the problem.
Oh, yeah. I've been doing
the
research. I've seen it. I've seen it. I bear witness to it. Okay. But it's all right because, you know, as quiet as this care, we got some plans in the fire, in the works there. It's all right. But, again, we have Brother Abdul Muhammad with us. We're very thankful that he took the time to join us, and again, you know, Brother Reed be hooking us up, and so he was able to make that connection. Of course, we got Brother Reed with us as well. Family, listen, again, Million Man March anniversary is coming, 28 years. Do something. Don't just, you know, talk about how nice it was, how good it was, and all of that. We know that, all right? My sons was there, so we know that. But now what? What are we talking about now? We know there's going to be quite a few things going on nationwide. Brother earlier mentioned what's going to be happening in D.C. We know some other things. But, again, remember, on the real, brother was murdered in Mississippi. Our brother Rasheem and Carter is his name. And again, we can send you information if you like. His body parts were found, or some of his body parts were found roughly a year ago. And, you know, his mother needs support. His family needs support. We need to show up. We need to do something. So Again, you can email us at nationalmwm@aol.com or A Million Black Women Rising, which is A-B-M-B-R-W, at now. That's our new, forgive me, that's our new Gmail address. So I'm just getting kind of familiar with it. It's for A Million Black Women Rising, but it's the letters. But at any rate, you can also text us at 267-636-3802, and we will certainly send you any links that you've heard tonight, any other information that you heard tonight. We'll be more than happy to forward that to you. We're going to bring Brother Reed back, if not next week, in the very near future, to get an additional and also on some other things that's going on with the National Black Agenda. And family, we're going to close this session out. Brother Reed, give us your closing comments for the night, and then we're going to close out with our brother Abdul.
Well, just thank what the work you've been doing, keeping the family and the unity and supporting the women, and just been a great support to me in Chicago. Give me a platform there, and I want to thank you for the Rakia Boyd, my family member, when she was killed back here in Chicago, about all $3 to Chairman Fred introduced me to you, and you took it to another level global, which helped us put pressure in Chicago. And again, my brother's been standing in the gap. We are organizing with the men. The reparations are talking. So let's just see what God love, because it's our time, as brother saying, his time is up. Thank you.
Ashe, ashe. Brother Abdul, your closing comments for tonight.
Sister, I want to thank you and your listeners for having me on the show and being able to share with you all what we've been doing in the city of Chicago to educate our children. You know, we hear a lot of negative things about Chicago, but we never hear about the brothers and sisters that are working every day to make those changes in the lives of our people. It's not all negative. It's really more positive than negative. So thank you for giving me a platform to be able to share that, and I look forward to working with you and organizing with you to make sure that we make the changes necessary in Chicago public schools on behalf of our children in the city.
I say. And, Brother, one more time, give that your website, please.
The website is justiceforabdulmuhammad.com, justiceforabdulmuhammad.com. You can sign the petition. You can make a donation, and right on that website, you can send an email to Mayor Brandon Johnson. All you have to do is click on his name. The email self-populates, and all you have to do is click send. That's on justiceforabdulmuhammad.com.
Yeah, Brandon Johnson, no speaker of English.
All right, family. Well, we're going to close out. We thank you all for tuning in tonight. We want to remind you one final thing. Remember, we do have political prisoners, y'all. Believe it or not, we do.
Right.
Mumia Abu-Jamal is one of them. Of course, Iman Jamil Alamin is another. Sadiqi Kaban is another. Listen, we got to do more. We cannot talk about reparations and not talk about freeing our political prisoners. And any people who will not stand up to free those who stood up for us, gave their lives and now are serving incarceration time, we owe it to them. We owe it to our ancestors. We must support the freedom of our political prisoners. So family, again, Mumia Abu-Jamal, we want to make sure that we do what we can to free our brother, to free all of our political prisoners. And so with that said, we're going to close out with Mumia Abu-Jamal. This is a commentary that we played last time, but we feel it's important that you hear it again. Brother Reed, we thank you again, and Brother Abdul, you as well. And you know we're going to stay in touch and get the job done.
Yes,
thank
ma'am.
You again.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you,
Peace
my sister.
You all. It's a pleasure and an honor. Mumia Abu-Jamal. Okay, what's going on? Of course, we're having a bit of technical difficulty, family. Bear with me. Hold on 1 minute. For some reason, I'm not getting a value. So let's see what's going on. Let's try that again. Hold on. Okay.
Bluetooth mode. All right. What's happening? Here we go. We got it. I thought we did. All right, family, there we are.
Advocate for the abolition of the systems of mass incarceration. The American Public Health Association, called AFA, watching the harrowing numbers of deaths in prisons, has determined that the age of abolition has come and has called for the release of the encaged elderly. One of the vagaries of mass incarceration is the explosion of the elderly as part of the prison population. Today, men in their 70s and 80s roll around here in wheelchairs or hobble on walkers or even stroll with the help of canes. They have a host of health problems, from diabetes to COPD, from heart ailments to cancer. It is time now to respond to the call from our formerly incarcerated and our impacted communities for the release of our elders who are no longer a threat. In its broad call for abolition, AFA has advanced the novel idea that the elderly in prison have been subjected to elder abuse by the state in all the ways they have been mistreated and maltreated. So they are subjected to solitary confinement, to aching joints, to the natural frailties of old age and time, to poor medical care, to make matters even worse. The American Public Health Association must now align with our formerly incarcerated elders and urge that elderly prisoners be made free of elder abuse. By release from confinement, they must urge this upon state, county, federal, and territorial prisons, jails, and institutions of detention. With love, not fear. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.